put out a handout. Some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about is kind of there, but really, I'm kind of breezing through a lot of even what you have. I'm going to touch on some of the stuff. A lot of the handouts there for you so that you can kind of go back and you can kind of dive into, you know, some pieces of it that really stand out or that you're really interested in understanding deeper. And I'll kind of talk about that a little bit. But last week, Marla talked about communication, and this is just kind of a tidbit on... how to help assure that you're prepared and ready to be able to communicate,
good,
if you would, or even the person that you're is trying to communicate to you, whether even that person, you could use this same type of technique, understanding to know whether or not they're even in a really good place to have this conversation, if you would. So the key to communication is being able to listen. So we'll put it on the receiving end. It's your responsibility as the listener. who's heard of the fight or flight like concept?
Yes.
Simply, what would you call it? What would you say it is?
Response to danger.
Response to danger. So I've got like this big, huge thing of what it is. You want to know what all that is? No. Simply put... it's kind of a state that you go into psychologically and physiologically when you are in what your body is referencing as danger, right? So I'm going to look at this. My adrenaline kicks up, and I'm going to either take on whatever this danger is that's coming at me, or I'm going to flee from that. Either way, my body's ready for it. Problem with that situation is usually you're not thinking very clearly. Would you agree? When your adrenaline's running and racing, are you thinking extremely clearly? No, it doesn't happen. Similar to you get in an emergency situation, and what does everybody tell you to do? Do not
panic.
Why do they say that? For the same reason. If you're in an emergency situation, you can't think straight. When your adrenaline's racing and you're just completely panicking, you can totally not understand what's going on around you and make a decision or even speak to anything that is of great value. So I'm going to give an experience, my personal experience of that, a story. It's not in your notes. See. when I was, let's say, preteen, our Royal Ranger Boys program here at this church, on a Wednesday night, we went to Tremper High School to go swimming on our night. And I was young enough to be able to swim, love the pool, absolutely loved it. I could swim underwater. Had no idea how to swim on top of the water, couldn't tread water, but I could swim underwater, you know. So on the low end, you know, I would go under and I would be able to swim, and then I'd stand back up. All things are good, right? Well, they had these little floaty boards. Everybody's seen, you know, a little, about this big surfboard, right? 2 foot long surfboard. So I could go to the deep end because I was on the little surfboard thingy, right? I fell off. Totally panicked. Went under, flailed like who knows, I have no idea. I don't even know how I got back to the top, to the surface. Finally got a hold of that surfy board thingy and got myself up. By the time I got up, everyone in the thing had already went into the locker room. Nobody knew I was in there. I was only this far from the wall. If I wouldn't have panicked, all I had to do is swim to the wall, you know, and just grab onto the wall. But panic took over. I didn't think, and it was probably one of the only experiences that I know of that I totally panicked, and whenever they talk about panicking, that situation, I'm always reminded of that situation. Yeah, I know what happens when that happens. So, again, panic, just like the fight or flight, your body, you're not thinking straight, you're not receiving information, you're not processing information, right? Those types of situations. So, have you ever tried communicating with someone and you're so angry or upset with them?
Never.
Right? Never. Or maybe that person has said something over and over and over, and you're just getting bored with the whole thing. That's kind of the opposite. It's still an emotional side. It's still not really an emotional, that type of response, but it's a just kind of shutting it down kind of response. Mm-hmm. What about when somebody walks up or in the middle of dealing with something and you're just extremely frustrated, it's not going as planned, and they want to talk to you right in the middle of, you know, you're trying to figure something out because it's not working right. You know, are you even listening at all to what they're saying? You know, in that type of situation. So, like I said, you know, kind of was explaining with the fight or flight and the panic, you know, your brain just feels like it's spinning. Sometimes you can even feel the hair on the back of your head standing up, depending on the emotion you're going through. You know, you can't hear anything the other person's saying some of the time. You know, these are signs of those times that what I'm going to call tonight is, I'm going to call it that you're in the box. You know, you're stuck in a box. And with that, you know, kind of like that fight or flight theory, you know, the panic, you know, you're not in a state to be able to think clearly, receive the information, process information, talk well, you know, and be a good listener. You know, in simple, you're not in a state to be a good listener, you know. So to be able to listen clearly and have that meaningful conversation that results in good communication, we want to make sure that we want to be able to recognize when we're in the box and how to get out of it. So how do we get out of the box? Sorry. Never mind. So maybe let's go through, I think on your notes there's some feelings that may include when you are in the box. Boredom, flatness, lack of motivation, frustration, anxiety, stress or fear, irritation, anger, exasperation, powerlessness, or despair. Feelings that you may feel when you're out of the box is the sense of possibility, energy, alertness, confidence, and clarity. So how to manage self-talk to get out of the box. So self-talk, what this is kind of referring to is kind of that you're talking to yourself in your head. You know, you're like, you could be in a situation, you know, oh, I know this is wrong, you know, what should I do? I need to do this or that, you know, self-talk, right? So a situation might happen where you get triggered. We'll use that word, triggered. It's a word used a lot these days. Where you get triggered or you feel a strong emotion. That self-talk has a potential of keeping you in the box. Mm-hmm. This self-talk shows up as either the judge or the pessimist. The self-talk that's going to keep you in the box shows up as either the judge or the pessimist. So you also have a realist that can bring new perspective, challenges. It challenges the self-talk that of the judge and the pessimist and helps you get out of the box. So use your head, use your heart, your head, your hands approach to get out of the box. We'll talk about that a little bit in a second. I think I gave everybody in their notes kind of the aspects of the judge, the pessimist, and the and the realist. I'm not going to really go diving deep into those. I'll read the first one. The judge makes broad sweeping judgments of situations and people involved in and clouds our ability to see the truth. These judgments could be aimed outward at others or inward at ourselves. The pessimist fixates on the downside of any given situation, often focusing on the future. Realist. The realist can help you get out of the box by moving from emotions and exaggerated stories to truth-telling. Tip, use that heart, head, hands to activate your realist and move from the triggered to the truth. So how do we do that? Again, using that heart, head, and hands approach. Heart, notice the emotions in self-talk. This shows up in the form of that judge or the pessimist. Pessimist, I'm saying that right? Pessimist. The head, discover what's actually true by activating the realist. And the hands, make a deliberate choice on how to respond. If you're still struggling to get out of the box, maybe a little time would help. Determine a different time that the conversation would be more beneficial for the two of you. So then I think I have on the notes too, the additional hints and tips on how to get out of the box. Physically, our feelings occur in our body, so making physical changes can help us change our state. Take a breath, slow down, count to 10, take a few deep breaths. Change your physical state, be active. Exercise is a great way to change the state, but just physical movement can help. Build your physical resilience, especially during demand times. We are much more likely to be triggered when we are tired, unexercised, nutritionally unbalanced, or overloaded. What? Busy? That can make life hard? Busy? Really? Focus. Often spending time getting clear on what we want rather than our fears helps us rediscover our perspective. Remind yourself of your purpose. We talked about purpose, right? Remind yourself of your purpose. What does the situation really need? Remind yourself of what's really important. What are the values you would like to express here? People. You can only listen to one thing at a time. Yes, I said that. You can only listen to one thing at a time. I'm listening. Yeah, I'm listening. You can only listen to one thing at a time, either your own self-talk or the other person. So that puts that into perspective. I don't know how many times you're in the middle of a conversation, somebody says something, and you kind of get triggered on one thing that they say, so you're fixated on that one thing in your mind and missing everything else the other person is saying. Mm-hmm. You ever experienced that? Focusing on the other can also restore that balance. So keep your focus on what they're talking about. Get into the other person's shoes. Start listening fully to others. see and hear them fully. Restate what you hear. Sometimes they talked about in communication, you know, communication is full circle, to where, you know, you receive information and restating that information back to the person kind of assures that you understood what they were saying. You know, it's one of the reasons why they say texting is so bad for communication, because you never really know how they received what you said. You could have said the exact same thing and they took it super happy, excited. Oh yeah, that sounds great. Or they're totally offended by it and you're using the exact same words. You know, so making sure in the communication, full communication means it's full circle. Getting curious about where they are coming. You know, you have receiving information from somebody and getting into that so that it piques your curiosity to, you know, what they're actually talking about. You know, not only what they're talking about, how is that making them feel? What does that do for them spiritually? You know, there's so much to what they're saying. There's so much there. And if you're just receiving the words and not diving into everything else behind it, you know, that's why they say body language is so important, you know, because it helps in the communication so that you can understand more of what's being presented to you. So, thoughts. This is the most powerful set of tools, as they are challenging the root cause, our self-talk. Begin to notice your patterns. What are the types of events and situations that put you in a box? What themes do you notice? So, I want to go back to you know, looking at that last statement, where'd it go? What types of events and situations put you in a box? What themes do you notice? You know, when we look at the things, the feelings that you may be feeling while you're in a box, boredom, flatness, lack of motivation, frustration, anxiety, you know, looking at this list, you know, this is what this is talking about. What do you notice? What are things that put you in a box? You know, because those are times where if you recognize it ahead of time, when you're in a situation, you can use your self-talk. Say, yep, no, we're not going to go there. I'm not going to get stuck in this. You know, I'm going to continue and push through and try to listen. Listen to what's being presented, what's being said to me, right? To keep yourself out of the box.
I'm gonna kind of wrap up what I started last week with communication, and I saved the big one for last. And is it going?
Yeah.
And the big one is conflict management. And we talked about some of these things. So some of these things might be a little bit of a review, because there's one particular part that I find important to re-say this time. And so let's go. Conflicts. If you're a person and you're talking to another person, you will find yourself in conflict a lot of times. And so this is a lifelong learning thing I want to emphasize. So as we were talking in our group and everything, it's not that you hear how you're supposed to work on this, but you'll have to do this forever, because people are people. And that's the problem with people. They're people. And if you're in a committed relationship with a you know, either a marriage or dating situation or contemplating asking that person or whatever, you're going to hit conflicts. And the way you solve those will help determine the intimacy in your marriage and trust in your marriage. So, here we go. Ephesians 5:25 says, "Husbands, they're admonished to love your wives just as Christ loved the church, and he gave himself up for her." And then Titus 2:3-4 says, "Elderly women," which I would be one, "are told to train the younger women to love their husbands." So both are commands. They're not feelings, they're commands. They're things that we are to do. So remember, Christ loves us even when we are unlovely. And we shouldn't expect perfection from our partners. He doesn't expect perfection from us. So 1 Peter 4:8 says, "Love covers a multitude of sins." And some things, there are some things to consider before entering into a difficult conversation where conflicts could arise. And the first one, we touched on this in our group, would you rather be right or would you rather be loved? If you'd rather be right than loved, then don't even say anything until you're ready to let that go. If you're going to have a conversation that may get heated, first, have a plan for what you're going to do, no matter what the other person does. What you do does not depend on the other person. It depends on your control of yourself. You can only control you. Remember that resolving conflict is a process. You decide how many disrespectful interactions you will participate in. The other person in the conflict doesn't need to be a great communicator in order for you to handle the situation well. So your conflict does not depend on the other person, even though that's our knee-jerk reaction. Well, he said this, or he did that, or what he does drives me crazy, or it's all on you. You also have to know when you're going to stop participating in the exchange. It takes two to have an argument. So you decide your actions, when you're not going to participate in this any longer, if it's just a circle of nothing, step away, either verbally or what, just wrap it up and wait until tempers are calmer and you can breathe a little bit better, get out of the box, and then if it needs to be resolved, you have to go back at it and talk it through. So one of the big problems in conflict is blame. Blame is huge. So first of all, as I said, give up on deciding that you're going to be right. It actually implies a form of blame for the other person. Nobody likes to be blamed. Nobody. So sometimes blame may be a reasonable response. Maybe it is all his fault or her fault. But all it does is escalate the problem. You're not going to get to the end of it. It's just going to inflame the problem. So keep that in mind. What you say, your body language, all the micro expressions do not imply blame, because you're going to get nowhere. If your partner hears you blaming them, their ears turn off and they immediately become defensive. So we've all had interactions where we could say that's true. Blame causes your partner to feel attacked, and they'll blame and insult you back as a mode of self-defense. And then you get into back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Nothing gets resolved. People get hurt. Nothing good comes of it. Then your relationship is affected. Blame interferes with true intimacy. So remember, blame never works, ever. Making your partner wrong is poison to the relationship. It'll build up walls and it won't manage the conflict. And getting yelled at leads to resentment, it leads to defensiveness, hurt, and escalation of the problem, and buildup of bad feelings, which creates even more problems to deal with later. So pause, take a breath, and calm down. The biggest thing, you don't want to start building walls of separation between you, because they are created brick by brick, and they create not only separation, but mistrust in your relationship. There are three questions. Now, this could be hard in the thick of it, but it really would help. There are three questions you should quickly ask yourself as things start to escalate in a conflict. One is, what is likely to happen if I insist on being right? If you'd rather be right and feel loved, if possible, just don't say anything at all. Don't even start the conversation. It's not time to deal with it. The second thing is, what is something that I like about my partner? Now, that may seem kind of odd, but if you can think of something that caused you to fall in love with your partner, something that you admire about them, it tends to cause the anger to fizzle out, because you're getting the nice warm feelings, the endorphins, from really focusing on what you love about that person. So, and the third one is, as far as, you know, thinking that, it does dissipate anger, softens your approach, and it'll help you emotionally connect with your partner. Because if there's not a connection there, there's not going to be resolution. And the third question would be, how might I have contributed to this situation? And this can help weed out your anger and self-righteousness and foster understanding and compassion. It helps you to focus on how your behavior affects your partner. I think that is a really important one, because, as I said, it takes two to be in an argument. What's your behavior contributing to this mess you're in, if you're in a mess? If you're more attentive to hearing, understanding, and meeting your partner's needs, he or she'll begin to be more sensitive and attentive to yours, because people tend to mirror each other subconsciously. So your behavior will help elicit better behavior from your partner. And remember, your partner doesn't have mental telepathy. So you need to communicate your need in a way that your partner can hear and understand you. And if you're one that tends to clam up and you don't even try to open up to make your partner understand your need, that's a lack of effective communication, and it makes intimacy and understanding impossible. You gotta let your partner in. You just have to. And if you love each other and you can't do that, you gotta work on that, because a long marriage, you need to let your partner in to your heart and what's really going on in there. So what happens if your partner starts to blame you? The way you can start to dissipate that is, the first thing you want to do is be defensive and get angry, but not gonna help. So if you're starting to hear blame from your partner, acknowledge your partner's experience. What they're experiencing, you may not agree with, but that's what they're experiencing. So listen to them, hear them. Validate his or her experience, which doesn't necessarily mean you have to agree with them. But just validate it, that their experience is important. You're both gonna win in this situation. And as we've talked about for 2 weeks now, hear them, really hear them. It'll shift the entire energy of the conversation. And then ask yourself the same three questions. If they're blaming you, ask yourself again, what is likely to happen if I insist on being right? What is something I really like about my partner who is blaming me for something? And how might I have contributed to the situation? Those questions can go in both situations. And it just helps fizzle all the heat and anger out of this when you start to really think about what you're saying before you say it, not after. So these steps will bring down the temperature. Pause and try this before saying another word. It'll help you with what you're feeling, and then your mate then can really hear you. So remember, our point is trying to understand our partner. That's the whole crux of this. And finally, let go of your need, again, to be right, and true intimacy can then be restored. And people won't be angry for hours until you can chill out if you handle your conflict right. Use words like I feel, because I, or I want communication, because that'll help you stay specific. Don't be general in what you need, because they can't respond to that. Be specific. And be vulnerable to your partner. Clearly express yourself without blame. Speak the truth in love. We all know this. We have to remember this. Edify your partner and say what you have to say in a way that builds your partner up and not destroys them. Realize that sometimes our growth does come with some pain. Proverbs 27:6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Sometimes when correction comes from the person you love, that might hurt for a bit, but it can stimulate your growth because you'll be able to receive it from someone you love. So one thing I wanted to bring up again, it's brief, was expressions and micro-expressions. We talked about that last week, how our communication actually is made up of three components: content, tone of voice, and body language. When your emotions are involved, nonverbal elements are more significant than verbal. If you talk to your mate or your friend or whoever with an eye roll and a sneer, but you say the right words, what have you communicated? So keep your face, like they say in England, I think, manage your face. Because they're picking up on everything. They're picking up on your body language. If you're like this, but yet you say the things you're supposed to say, no good. So just keep in mind, you're closing yourself off when you're in a little tiff or whatever, and you do those things. All those things are very important, critical. 93% of our communication is done without words. So the verbal aspect only is comprised of 7% of the total message we send to and that another person receives. The tone of voice counts for 38%. I can tell with me, that's huge. The remaining 55% is nonverbal, or what we're doing when we say it. Be careful of these things to avoid misunderstandings, hurt feelings, or arguments. Be careful of all that other stuff, because you could say the right words and it means nothing. So, what happens when couples tend to not follow fair ways of handling conflicts? Walls of separation begin to build. And personal pride is a hurdle for all of us. Don't allow a wall to separate you two. In whatever relationship you have, don't even let a wall to start building up, because it's harder to tear them down once they've built up. And once you've lost trust, once you've lost communication, I'm not even going to say anything because they're going to just react this way. So I'm just not going to say it. And then you stew in your offense. All those things build brick by brick, walls of communication. And then it's going to be hard when 30 years comes in your marriage and you've got this huge brick wall built up. Your kids fly the coop. They're long gone and you're stuck with your mate that you have separated yourself from. That is super important. You have an awful lot of time after your children are gone in your life. Cultivate your own marriage because they will be gone someday and you will be living with the person you chose and you may have all these walls built up from 30, 40 years. So, I mean, it's actually good advice. So these walls are erected one block at a time and one unresolved hurt at a time. One by one. If you do build a wall of separation between you, communication stops, and resentment and mistrust can take hold. So for longevity, when you stand at the altar and say, I do, and pledge to spend the rest of your lives together, this is important. It's very important. Walls also are destroyed, though. The good news is walls are destroyed one block at a time. Confession and forgiveness tears down walls of separation. Life is too short to live that way. It just is. So just commit not to building these walls to begin with. And if you notice a few blocks there, get rid of them and move on and be happy. So confessing your failures may actually trigger your partner to do the same. And remember, always remember, you can only control yourself. You cannot control anybody else. So deal with your faults as they occur. Instead of pointing out the plank in your partner's eyes, deal with your splinters in yours. Or the other way, deal with the plank in your own eyes first, because none of us are perfect. Recognize our faults and deal with our faults and stop pointing out the other one's faults before you deal with your own. So if you express kindness and love, guaranteed you'll be more likely to receive it from your partner. And remember all your negative, this is important, guys, so remember all your negative emotions don't need to be expressed. Just because it's in your head does not mean it needs to come out of your mouth. If it's going to tear down your, start building up hurt and resentment, check it. Just check yourself. And don't feed on your negative emotions. Don't get stuck in them. Clubbing each other with past failures that have already been dealt with, it never leads to miracle growth. It just leads to more walls. So if there's something that you've already handled and put to bed, try very hard not to bring it up again and again and again and again. I know more people that have broken up over things like that. If you're having a rough time communicating in relationship, your relationship, remember, people don't make us miserable. We choose to make ourselves miserable. So a lot of these things are a choice, and we're to start looking more inward instead of outward. What they do, what bugs us about them, all these things, and start looking inward. And how are you contributing to this? You know, ask those three questions that I mentioned. Whenever a relationship breaks down, both people are part of the breakup, and neither one of them can move to restore it. Even only one motivated partner can improve a marriage, even if the other one won't budge. It won't be ideal, of course, but the marriage still can be better. And who knows what God will do to your mate if you become a helper instead of a hinderer. Some things you can do when you're angry that will help you understand your partner's need, remember we're supposed to understand, is to, this is huge, take turns talking. This really helps people. No butting in, no correcting or negating your partner. Let them talk, and let them talk as long as they need to. Zip it, which is hard, and listen to them, because what they're saying is their point of view. You may not agree with them because it's not your point of view, but it's not your turn to talk yet. So hear what's coming out of their heart. And this allays the heat so you can get to the problem and you can start to understand. When your partner is talking, you should be listening carefully, not thinking about what you'll say next. Not a retort, not a, I don't agree with that, or that's not true, or whatever. Listen, because for them it is. That's the way they've experienced whatever the thing is that you're supposed to be resolving. So listen carefully. And James 1:19 says, everybody should be quick to listen. So try to understand what your partner is feeling the way that they are. Like I said, you don't have to agree with them, but that's their point of view. Validate, and of course your point of view is the right one, but but that's how we want to say. But then after they get done talking, it's your turn. And your turn isn't to just bash everything they say, but to say things from your point of view so they can understand you. Validate your partner's feelings or need. Unresolved need is one of the greatest issues in relational conflict. Communicate your needs without pointing a finger verbally to the other person. And ask yourself, what need does my partner have that I'm not meeting? If they're unhappy, you're part of it. So that's where you're going to learn, and you're going to get to the understanding to find out what is your part of it. Is it the way you're speaking to them? Is it the way you're reacting to them? Is it the way you're ignoring them? You know, what's your stake in it? So if you are wrong, admit it. Don't sit and rationalize why something happened. Don't try to slink out of it that way. Just be a grown adult, admit that you were wrong, and apologize. Proverbs 15:1 says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. So, nonviolent communication, which is what we're supposed to be doing here, in conflict management uses the following steps. You create a connection first. Then you observe. You identify and express your feelings. You connect feelings with needs. Display empathy. That's hard in some cases, and you can fake empathy, but they'll figure out you're faking empathy every time, because most of our communication is nonverbal. If you empathize with someone, that means you have that connection. You have connected with them, and that is so important to your loved one. Make doable requests of the other person. So, you know, when you're making yourself clear, don't throw out something they can't do. You know, that's just a exercise in failure. So, those are simple. So the objective is not to get the other person to do what you want. We're just asking the other person for understanding and for change to happen. Both parties need to feel that their needs are met. And both parties have to feel that their needs matter. You're both important, and what you're feeling matters. If you have a spouse or a someone you're dating that you just get the feeling that you don't matter. It won't last. That has to be worked on. Do it before you say I do. If you've already said I do, work on it. You both matter. So, if you get that idea from the person you're conversing with, then most conflicts actually easily resolve if they feel like they're being heard and that they matter. And often the problem solves itself once that connection is made, because you're dealing with your loved one. You know, you're not dealing with someone you don't care about. You have emotional ties to this person. So you want to express, we need to express our own needs as well. We need to search for the real needs of the other person, no matter how they're expressing themselves. That's the hard part. When they're not expressing themselves very well, it's very easy to climb into that mode and mirror that method of communication. So someone has to be the adult in the room, and these are hard things, especially when feelings are clashing, needs are not seeming to mesh. So even if your partner is not expressing themselves well, who are you responsible for? Yourself. So if they're expressing an opinion, judgment, or an analysis, recognize that, but continue to search for the actual need underneath what they're saying. Because in order for you to understand that, you have got to find out what their need is. If they need to blow off steam, whatever, you're looking for what they need. So then you verify that you both understand each other's needs. If not, keep searching for it. So provide as much empathy to mutually hear each other's need accurately. Genuine empathy is critical here. Keep your face right. Keep control of your face. Keep control of how you're presenting yourself, because you're trying to convey empathy and understanding. And it's easy not to believe that. If someone's not, their micro expressions aren't lining up with that. When people are upset, they often need to hear empathy before they can hear what is even being said to them. They have to know you're on their side. Propose strategies for resolving the conflict. Use positive action language. Avoid using language that implies blame, as we've talked about, wrongness, or criticism. So, positive action language, what do I mean by that? Here's an example. Say to your partner, would you be willing to, whatever you need from that partner, don't just say, I need you to do this, you know, or stop doing that. Would you be willing to do this? That helps. It all matters on the way you present the issue. You're either going to have someone be on board with you, or you're going to have someone block you off. So if you do that, it helps to foster a respectful discussion and a clarity in your request. And it also helps you figure out what your real need is. Because we were talking about how women speak. Women talk a lot more than men. It's true. Terry's got figures on that, and he'll probably give you that next week. Women do generally speak more than men. So sometimes we have to speak until we can figure out what we need. But try to be more clear if you can. And focus on what you do want, not what you don't want. Be specific. Use action verbs, not passive, and be clear about what you're requesting while maintaining respect. So I'm going to end this exactly where I started it from last week. And I know we've all heard this many, many times, but let's listen to understand 1 Corinthians again, 13, 4 to 8a. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy or is jealous. Love doesn't boast. It's not proud. It's not rude, and it's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. Love never fails. The end. So I have a couple questions for breakout, and that we can share a bit. But never forget that this is a lifelong thing. I mean, you may not generally act like you should in conflict. It's all a learning curve. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Do better, because you know better now. So do better, and life will go well.